At this time, the call is being recorded.
Thank you very much. This is Ray Fassett, chair of our call. Why don't we ask for a roll call? Glenn, would you like to do that, please?
Certainly, Ray. I'll do that for you. We have yourself Ray Fassett on the line, Wolf Ulrich Knoben from the ISPs, and Ron Andruff from the business constituency. And for staff, we have Julie Headland and Glenn de Saint-Gervais. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Glenn. Okay. Okay, excuse me. A couple things going on here at the same time. So a brief update I'd like to give on the high-level principles document is I have reached out now formally to those members that we identified. It is just in the last day or so that I've done that. So I don't have any formal feedback as yet. And keep in mind that those that we did identify are very active in the ICANN community, so have a number of things on their plate in addition to this. But I expect to get good cooperation back in terms of their willingness to provide feedback. I did have one initial comment come back already from one member I won't identify right now. But the question was, are you asking me this in a personal capacity, in my capacity as a constituency member, do you want me to answer on behalf of my employer? So that was the question I got back, and I felt the best answer to that question was those that we've reached out to and chosen to for this just initial feedback was for the purpose of gaining their experience. You know, that they're very experienced in the ICANN policy process, and what we are looking for is not so much a company's special interest or a constituency's special interest, but really their expertise from being involved for many years in the ICANN policy process. So I wanted to share that with the work team if that was an appropriate response.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so
Ray, it's Ron.
Sorry. Please, Ron. Go ahead.
I was a little slow getting to the phone. Just wanted to ask the document that you sent out. Can you just name who the document went to? This is the KITE document we're referring to, right?
Yes, it was the KITE document.
Yes.
And in the email that I sent out, and the reason I sent them out individually from me is I wanted them to feel that they could speak freely. And while I didn't necessarily come out and say it, I think it has an overtone that, you know, whatever responses come back are not necessarily going to be published. You know, so speak freely. I think that is what the aim is from our group in doing this step.
I agree with that, by the way.
Oh, good.
Yep. Yep.
And I also put in my phone number. If anybody said they wanted to, they had clear, you know, they didn't really understand it, they could call and we can discuss it up front. So it went to Avery Doria, Chuck Gomes, Philip Shepard, Robin Gross, Bruce Tonkin, Marilyn Cade, Steve Metallitz, John Nevitt, and Robert Gaetano. So there's the group. Pretty representative, I think.
Very good.
Okay.
Did you give them, I'm sorry, just the last thing on that, is there, in terms of next steps with them, was there in your mind, or did you give them a timeline on that, or are you going to do a ring round in a week or so, or how's that go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's what I'll do. I think I'll give it a week or so, and then I'll ping them back again. I did not necessarily put in a time frame. I certainly stated that we are specifically seeking your input. So please don't ignore this sort of approach, while at the same time asking for your volunteer cooperation at a time when you have a million other things going on, I'm sure. So that's how I framed it. I think we'll be okay. And if a week goes by and I've got nothing back at all, say a week from this Friday, or let's say a week from today, then I'll ping everybody back and see if there's some comments.
Okay.
Okay. So with that said, I think our agenda today, as I mentioned, might be worthwhile to spend some time on the other nearer-term subject matter we have in front of us, which is the SOI, DOI documents, statement of interest, declaration of interest documents, and perhaps from the perspective of there's some work going on here at the ICANN board level on a conflicts of interest policy, which is not the same thing, but nonetheless something is out for public comment, which I can honestly tell you I have not spent a lot of time analyzing what it's all about, and I was hoping maybe Julie might be able to give us some background and what about some of the hot points.
Sure, Ray, I'd be happy to do that. For those of you who are up on the wiki site, or Ray also sent the links, the link to the revised conflicts of interest policy. This is the ICANN board conflicts of interest policy. The board governance committee has revised the policy and posted it for public comment. So it's up on the web. If you can't find the link, let me know.
Julian, just interrupt. That
please.
Was the link that that Ray sent. I'm looking at the document now, I believe. It's in, it says ICANN, Conflicts of Interest Policy, Article 1, Purpose and Administration.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's correct. Yep. So a few points of interest. First of all, this is a conflicts of interest policy, which is consistent with the policy that the board has followed, as opposed to a statements of interest or declarations of interest policy. It does, however, have procedures for disclosing interests, which you will see in Article 2, procedures regarding conflicts of interest disclosure. And it has procedures for annual statements of interest and procedures for violations of the conflict of interest policy, which is also under Article 2, Section 2.5. Some of these might be of interest to us as we, this work team, that is, develops a policy for statements of interest, declarations of interest. Let me see, just looking through the document, other things that might be of interest. Periodic reviews, which is Article 6, and that sets procedures for periodically reviewing the conflicts of interest. And then the last article is definition. I guess I would point out, for purpose of discussion here, again, as I mentioned, this is a conflict of interest policy. The draft statement of interest, declaration of interest policy that I had put together for review and consideration by the work team was more along the lines of something less legally binding, because the conflicts of interest policy, if you look through this one here, has some basis in California law. The policy that the council had, GNFO council, had currently been followed was not legally binding per se, as far as I understand it. Glenn, you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But did have, you know, various requirements that council members need to follow as far as making statements and disclosing interests and so on, without, though, a legal aspect attached to that. Any questions on this?
Yes, this is Ray. I'll make a comment, and I'll also take a cue. Is there anybody else?
Yes, Wolf
and Ron.
And Ken Stubbs, Ray.
Hey, welcome, Ken.
Hi, Ken. I've been here. I showed up about 3 minutes late, so.
Oh, you didn't hear us talking about you then?
No.
Okay.
No, but that's all right. I'll get over it.
All right. The first comment I would like to make is that there is definitely where we arrived in our last call is there's definitely a distinction between what is a conflict of interest policy and what is a statement of interest or declaration of interest policy. So, and I think where we landed was due to some language concerns that was it Ron that brought forward or some others that, yeah, we're tying people in the ICANN policy process to California law. Why are we doing that? This was based on us asking Julie to give us a draft to look at, and then we came back and said, well, why does this draft say something to do with California law? And the reason is is ICANN board is looking at a conflict of interest approach where a statement of interest or declaration of interest are not the same. So the concept that we would, under our scope and agenda here as a work team, be able to come up with a single type of document that can work for a board member, could work for a working group member, could work for a constituency member, which sounds great, but really does not work in practice. I think this is where, now I'm speaking out loud because I think this is where we landed, in that we don't want to, in the concept of a working group where we're just trying to achieve consensus, we're not looking to tie people down to California law. So we've moved away from a conflict of interest policy now to a statement of interest and declaration of interest approach. And what I'd like to say is, how can we, is there anything in this ICANN board conflict of interest policy that can pertain or assist us in coming up with a uniform statement of interest or declaration of interest document that can be used broadly by all constituencies, by all working group members, you know, something that is really streamlined in order for everybody to be able to get their hands around this particular issue. Everybody's kind of doing it their own way now. So one of the objections we have is, how can we standardize it? And is there anything from the conflict of interest approach the board is taking that can help us with that? Now, Julie, you mentioned that there is some citing in here of a statement of interest as part of their conflict of interest policy. Did I hear that correctly?
There's a policy to disclose, and that would be, whether you disclose or state, essentially you're saying, well, these are my interests as relate to the work at hand. So it has some similarities to what we might be devising, which is, we might say that these are the procedures for when council members or working group members have to make their statements, when do they have to declare their interests, and we might be able to pull out some of that language if we felt it was useful.
Okay.
Ray?
Yes.
I'm responding to your question. I'm not trying to jump up on the queue.
Okay.
Also, I think it's a good idea for us to take a very close look at the definitions that are included in there, because they may be quite useful for us. Also, I think that we have situations that may very well require a declaration of interest before a vote, where someone may already have a statement of interest filed publicly. But I think it's part of a process before a vote, especially critical votes. We need to ensure that there's a requirement, for instance, for the chair of a council or the chairman of a committee to request if there are any declarations of interest that needed to be expressed prior to a specific vote, not for intimidation purposes, but we may very well have a situation where somebody could have a financial interest or something like this in something that would result from a decision that needs to be declared. That's all.
That sounds like, Ken, what you're describing is a high-level principle.
Well, I think it goes even deeper than that. If you're looking at the string on the council right now, for instance, there's some issues that have come up that they're trying to ask council members specifically to sign on to a statement. And I think, you know, Christina Rosette pointed out, you know, that I am a representative of a specific group, and I can't sign on necessarily because the presumption is that I represent a position from my group, and I need to go back and get counsel. So I think we need to make very clear that if you have a circumstance in the future where there is a request for an individual to sign on to a specific statement, there needs to be a different set of standards for an individual. The presumption is that the individuals are representing interest groups, but in some cases they're acting in a capacity where they're not representing that interest group. That's the point I'm making.
Okay, fair enough.
Ray, this is Julie. Can I get in the queue?
Who is that?
Julie.
Oh, Julie, sure. I will put you. I assume, Ken, that's not your comment, but I'm putting Julie after you. If it is, we'll deal with that. Okay, Wolf, why don't you go ahead?
Yes, thank you, Ray. just for my understanding. So, I would say to find out what kind of principles we should use for what is for this DOI or SOI or COI or what else. So my feeling would be, okay, let's take as much as possible as it is available already. Mm-hmm. That's for example this paper about the COI policy from ICANN, which is now on public comment. So my question would be with regards to that. I understand that there has been already imposed a COI policy, but this is now going under review, and this is the paper which has been published. So the question to me is, I cannot see what is the difference of this paper right now, the new proposal, and the old one. So where are the real differences on this? Looking to those differences means for me, I wouldn't go to start with this discussion from scratch, because I think there has been done something in the past and there must be something available. Let's just find out the differences or some new ideas which are maybe not in that paper. Let's discuss those points. But I cannot see the difference. So I would like to ask Julie or whomever who is familiar with that paper, what are the differences with the existing policy and this new proposal?
So just for clarification, Wolf, your question is, what's the difference between this new proposed conflict of interest policy that ICANN is asking public comment on versus what already exists today?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think that could be a relevant question. All right, Julie, why don't you go ahead and take a stab, if you can. If you're not, if you can't because, you know, you haven't done that analysis, that's okay too.
Yeah, I unfortunately, Wolf, I haven't done the analysis between the 1999 conflict of interest policy and the current policy. I'm happy to do so and make that comparison.
Yeah, my suggestion, you know, Wolf, that's an excellent point, though. And my suggestion might be that's a public comment, is it would be useful to identify, for ICANN staff to identify the changes from the existing policy to the new policy. I think that's a good public comment, to be honest with you.
It's because, you know, just to underline that, for me, I don't think that we have to go into to start really from the scratch. Because I'm, for example, I'm not a lawyer. So I cannot judge on some things which may be on international level already have been imposed in international laws and what else. So I cannot judge on that. So for me, it's only a feeling, I guess, let me say, if I go through that document, okay, this might be okay, this might be too weak. If I read, for example, some definitions, for example, compensation, though, there is something in that definition which means there's this kind of gifts or favors that are substantial in nature. So what does it mean, substantial in nature, in such thing? It's weak a little bit. So
let me cut back into the queue here, and I apologize, but let me offer some observation. The idea here is we want to encourage broad participation from as many members in the community that want to participate into working groups, what have you, and the more successful the GNSO is at doing that for policy, the better off everybody's interest in ICANN is going to be. That's the logic behind it. So the smaller or less amount of barriers we can put up to that would discourage people from participating, then the better off we are. So if we start throwing in things like you will abide by California law, I think we're going down a path of a barrier that we don't want.
Okay.
Meanwhile, we want to create efficiencies. So we could take an approach of, well, any member of the community that wants to get involved, we're going to just have an honor system. Okay, everybody's going to say that they're not trying to advance their own special interest or anything. They're working in, you know, in a cooperative way, collegial way, whatever word we want to use. And it's just going to be an honor system. We don't need any more than that. Now, that would be no barrier. So, but what we're looking at is, okay, well, there should be some minimum some minimum approach here that's
okay.
standardized for everybody. We'll call it a statement of interest. Here's my statement of interest. This is a blanket thing that I'll update from time to time. And then as it pertains to a specific issue, we would, as Ken points out, we would request the chair of that working group or the leader of that group, whatever term we want to use, to just say, okay, now if there's any declaration of interest that you would like to make, here's the opportunity for you to do so before we commence work. So these would be very minimum and maybe even commonsensical thresholds that we could then apply broadly throughout the ICANN policy process that can work for all that feel compelled to want to participate, and that we don't want to discourage their participation. So does that help provide some, are we all kind of on the same page with that thinking?
Yes, right. Thank you for this.
Right, so now we got this ICANN conflict of interest approach here, which is now, that's more heavy-handed, right? Now, this is an ICANN board, they have fiduciary responsibility, ICANN is an incorporated entity and under a given state in a given country, and that brings in the lawyers. And when you bring in the lawyers, sometimes that can impede rather than invite. So, all we would like to do is try and understand, is there anything from this conflict of interest policy, which is more heavy-handed, that we want to have incorporated into the statement of interest policy? And the answer could be no. No, there isn't. Those are two different things. We're trying to do something else here with a statement of interest policy and a declaration of interest approach. And the question becomes, what should the statement of interest the policy contain? And I think Ken hit on a key point, when do you invoke the declaration of interest approach in any of the given policy work? So with that, let's go back to the queue. Ron?
That's a great segue, Chair. Two points. In my view, the board conflict of interest policy is very specific to the board, and it should be addressing the board issues, because as you said very clearly, the board have to address a number of issues here, and so therefore their conflict of interest policy needs to be specific to the board. For our purposes within our GOT, I think we should be looking very clearly at the statement of interest and the disclosure of interest. Ken, have been supporting the fact that the chair of any working group or the chair of any GNSO body, whether it's even the administrative body over the policy body, will ask prior to every meeting. Just as a standard course, we take the role, we set the agenda, and then the first question that's asked is, we have, everyone here has a statement of interest in? Yes, we all do. Good. Second point is there any disclosures of interest with regard to the topics we'll be addressing today? So that should be part of the ongoing principles of ICANN. Roll call, agenda review, and then go right. First thing we do is get disclosures of interest for that particular meeting.
I think that's a sound comment. I think my request to Julie on this one is going to be, what I'm hearing here is sort of a high-level principle, and I think Ron just framed it, which is at the beginning of a deliberation or whatever that might be, the leader asks for a roll call, identifies that all on the call have a statement of interest, and then asks if there's a declaration of interest that needs. Is that, am I hearing that correctly?
You heard it correctly, and I would just say that we also need to get our terms correct. I think right now we're looking at disclosure of interest. We're going to call it disclosure or a declaration, but one of the two, we'll nail
good
it
point.
Down.
Good point, and that's me. Yeah, that's me. It should be disclosure of interest.
Okay, so that is the high-level principle, and then if you take that principle and you go back to look at Julie's document, then the question pardon me, comes back to the same one you're posing. Do we need a conflict of interest as well? I think, from my view, if we have a conflict of interest issue addressing the board, then from everyone, GNSO and working groups down, a statement of interest and a disclosure of interest probably are enough. Statement of interest is something that's being submitted once a year, Mm-hmm. These are my activities. These are who I consult, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then declaration happens that on this particular topic, I do have, you know, something I need to disclose to the group prior to getting involved.
Yeah, so once a year or as necessary.
Yeah.
Ray, it's Ken Stubbs. Can I make a comment?
Ken, you're next up.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to, let me take one step further, not trying to elaborate on what Ron said, but rather to provide some specific examples of why things I think need to be done. First of all, to the best of my knowledge, we have not changed the process as far as policies go, where if a PDP is passed and a specific policy is recommended to the board with a supermajority, there is a significant requirement on the board not to accept that policy. So, in effect, what we're doing is, in many ways, amending contracts that exist. So it's extremely important that any time a vote that has that kind of an impact is taken, there needs to be clarity in the process to ensure that all of the parties voting, it's strictly for transparency, have clearly indicated whether or not there's any interest. They can do this by, first of all, filing on an annual basis the statements of interest, but it's extremely important that a declaration of interest in that specific vote, and I think it needs to go one step further. We are dealing with people from various cultures who speak, where in many cases English is not necessarily the only language that they deal with. And I think it's important that they require on these votes in the future a ratification by each council member, no, I have nothing additional, rather than just saying, anybody who has an interest in this upcoming vote, would you please declare it? It goes too fast and it's too easy to gloss over. So all I'm trying to do is to create an environment, because in the last 10 years, there have been situations, please believe me, including situations as high as the board level, where interests were not properly declared. That's the reason the board has had to go back on two different occasions and revise this. There have also been situations where the process has not been used properly at the GNSO level. In some cases, it was an attempt to intimidate people, and that's not being fair. And I just want to make sure that there's enough clarity in the way the process is administered that we don't end up with these gray areas where people start second-guessing. That's all.
Well, I think it's a good point, Ken, because, again, you're talking about administration, and when we, with our agenda being how do the council can move to a manager of the policy process, a lot of it is about it. How do we, what kind of principles can we put together to so that gets administered that way? So it's a very valid point that you're making, I think.
Well, sure, and if you look at this council letter to the GAC that's going on right now, it's a perfect example, because Christina makes it very clear. If I'm expected to support the letter as a member of the council, I have an obligation to consult substantively with, at a minimum, the leadership of my constituency. There's always that presumption. The optics are extremely important, and we just, that's the one thing ICANN has been consistently criticized on, and in some cases has been purely optic. Mm-hmm. And,
Yeah, good point. Julie, you're in the queue.
Right, thank you very much, Ray. I just wanted to address a couple of things. But first of all, to follow up on what Ken has mentioned, and that is the importance of making sure there is a process for a disclosure or a declaration of interest, and I think we're settling on the term disclosure, prior to every meeting, whether that be a council meeting or a working group meeting or so on. And in the draft policy that I had developed for the team's consideration and Section 4, Disclosure of Interest, I had indicated that council members should disclose interest, and that in the second paragraph that the council chair, vice chair, work team chairs, et cetera, should announce any such disclosures of interest at the beginning of the meeting. And I think from what I'm gathering, we really need to go further. What I'm hearing from most of you, and of course you can clarify this, is that we could go further and say very specifically that the chairs of any of the meetings would, you know, go through the roll call, and then the next step would be to ask if there are any disclosures of interest. But I think, as Ken noted, to go even beyond that and say each member, you know, would say, no, I have no disclosures, or yes, I do, to make it very clear that, you know, there needs to be a response. The second point I wanted to make was, because I'm not sure it's been clear, but there has been no written policy for GNSO council members as far as how to, you know, what is the policy for stating interest or disclosing interest. There, that being said, there is a wealth of tradition that and various sort of informal guidelines that council chairs have followed, so that if you are in a council meeting, you note that, you know, Avery will ask for declarations of interest, disclosures of interest before any of the work begins and after the roll call. And if any disclosures have been made, she announces them. But to my knowledge, this is not written down, which is why this team is going through this exercise. And I agree very strongly with, you know, with Wolf and others here that if there are things that we can use that already exist, pieces out of the conflicts of interest document, I think that could be helpful to try to have some consistency. But keeping in mind that I think we want to consider what Ray has mentioned, that is not setting up too many barriers to participation, and that the process for council members and working groups might be less rigid than that required of the board.
Well, two things, if I may respond to that, Ray.
Yes, please, Ron, go ahead.
Excuse me. With regard to that, Julie, I think that the statement of interest itself, this should be, you know, we need to, I agree with Ken, we need to require an affirmative notice of change or affirmative comment at each meeting. But I think that we also need to beef up the policy as a whole by saying, you know, it's not merely a change to the private interest statement that, you know, that isn't publicly noticed today. Today, if an officer or counselor makes a change, they just make a change to their linked statement, but no one notices that there was a change or not. So what we need to do is this process of updating interest statements have to happen in a way where a full interest statement should be posted on say, you know, the council site or something like that, and the working group sites. All of their interest statements should be posted. There should be a place that it's publicly available for people to go look at and not linked somewhere. So statements of interest from anybody in a working group or a GNSO. So that means coming back to a little bit to the original, your original language, where right now we have GNSO council member noted throughout the document. We should say perhaps relevant party / GNSO council member, or, you know, working group member / GNSO council. I don't want to just, I'd rather keep that definition broader than more narrow, coming back to the comments previously that the board needs to have its own statements, and then for the rest of us, we have to have our statements. So therefore, I don't know, the rest of us, what does it all entail? Well, it's working groups, it's the GNSO, and it may be other groups that we're not thinking about, so keep the language broad enough to include those as well.
Well, you know, Mrs. Ray, true, all true. Let me offer a thought. There's not going to be a cross-check audit system built into this. There's no way for us to know.
Well, the audit is in the public posting. So if I'm working right now, for example, we're all working on this GOT.
Mm-hmm.
Our names are all attached to it. You look at the wiki; it's all clear. Mm-hmm. Who's who and what's what. Our
right.
Statements are there. So that's where the checking can happen.
But no one's validating my statement of interest.
No, but I could, let's put it this way, I could go on and have a look at it as an interested community member, mm-hmm. and if I saw something there that wasn't quite right, I go, hey, just a second, I know that you're doing this work. I could contact you, or I could contact some authority to say, could you please look into this? The point being is there's going to need to be a certain amount of policing. Small letter P.
Yeah, now you're hitting on the
by the community itself in the beginning to make sure that everyone is being faithful to this principle.
Now you've opened a whole new can of worms. A concept of policing, whether capital P or little P. And
capital P means you actually have individuals tasked with that responsibility.
Yeah.
Small P means more the fact that we're working together as a community to ensure that we're all fulfilling this practice. Now, the point is, it's not about being. I think the real issue here is not that. Let me put it another way: if I post my statement of interest with regard to this working group, then it's incumbent upon me to keep that updated. And if anybody were to see that it's not updated and were to catch me, the embarrassment of that, what it could mean to my reputation within ICANN that, I'm really not being a straight shooter, is more of a penalty to me than any penalty that ICANN could give me.
Right. Well, let me offer this thought. Okay, ICANN, obviously has evolved over the years. It's gotten bigger over the years. But one of the criticisms today is it's still not big enough. Not enough participation, not enough public input. It's increase. Well, as we go down that path and we get people starting to populate working groups, and hopefully not one person any more than one group at any time, right? That's the goal. There could become an issue of who are you? And how do we know you are who you say you are? You're participating in this group. You said your name is X. Here's your statement of interest. Do we know if that's even real? Do we need to think about this stuff? Is this part of what we need to think about as a work team? Policing is a strong word. Validating is a strong word. Obviously, we want to have as few barriers as possible. We don't want people to jump through too many hoops. But can we all envision, could we envision a system where, geez, we didn't think about that, and we've got people participating in working groups that are completely not, purposely, if you will, purposely even, hiding who they are and what their interests are.
Wait, it's Wolf speaking.
Yes,
yeah.
Wolf.
I think we should really differentiate between those two things. The one is to impose a process, a kind of process of declaration or statement of interest process. That's the one thing, and the other thing which just came up is with this police things. I think that is not an item which we should think about and cover, because what is necessary in this whole process, in this whole policy process? It's something necessary to show to the public and to the community that a process has been implemented, which may help to make transparent the conditions under which the people and the who are engaged in ICANN and in the meetings, in the working groups, under which conditions they are working in their business life, let me say, in their business life.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. It could not be a task for us then to implement a kind of policy of high policing, so to search for whether people have been announced in a correct way their conditions under which they work. It's just the other way around, to think around this process of SOI implementation, nothing else. That's my opinion.
I think it's a good opinion. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Ray, could I get in the queue?
Yes, please go ahead, Julie.
I should mention that there has been some concerns raised, and I think these also were in the sort of the impetus behind the board recommendation for a statement of interest or disclosure of interest. There was some concern that the information that people have provided in the past has not been consistent. For instance, as you realize for this particular team and any of you know those of you who have been council members, there are a number of questions that you have to answer in your statement of interest. But if you review statements of interest that are available for the various teams, these statements aren't necessarily answered in a consistent manner. And so while I'm hearing that this group is considering not addressing something such as an enforcement issue, I guess there's still a question in my mind as to whether or not there should be some mechanism for checking the accuracy of the information that's provided and to ensure that the questions have been answered completely. And I'll just give an example. When I pulled together statements of interest for the PPSC and the OSC working groups at the beginning of this process, there were some questions that people did not answer at all, simply just said not applicable. And I'm not really sure that that's necessarily an appropriate response. It wasn't for me to question them, but I do believe that's a concern that's been raised, and I'll just put that out there for consideration.
Well, I agree with what Julie just said. This is Ron.
Yes, Ron.
If you think about it right now, we've got all kinds of these kinds of little, you know, nagging nabobs and negativity. Registrars, you know, not disclosing their companies may be actively engaged in changing their business model, or nominating committee reps not disclosing that they intend to promote a new GTLD, or a registry rep that's working within a constituency, but they're repping potential applicants, but they're not bringing this to the fore. This is what we're trying to weed out. What we're trying to say is let's be open and transparent and honest. And if that's the case, if there's something that where someone has not been, then there has to be a mechanism, as Julie has mentioned, that there's a sanction of some sort. Now that means the individual is removed from that committee or from that group, or given a period of time where they need to sit out. Again, the stigma of being a bad apple, not playing fair in the sandbox with the rest is a pretty strong stigma. I don't think any one of us would like to be know people are talking in the hallways about how we got thrown off that committee because we didn't disclose less and such. So I think that we have the ability to do this. We just need to make sure that there's some mechanism there. I'm a little concerned about having staff get into this untenable position because, having the staff have controls about, who is overstepped their statement of interest or not, that's not right. So we've got to be very careful about that, and, Julie has something about that in the first draft. That's why I'm bringing it up. But we do need to have something in there that is substantial that says if you don't declare, then there will be consequences. And once we get those, and what I was talking about policing earlier had to do with the fact that there will be a certain amount of let's check these things, like Julie just mentioned, and if it comes back with some stuff saying not applicable, send it back to them and say it is applicable, please fill in the answer, or you're not on this work group, or you're not on this council, or you're not on whatever that party might be. We have to have that in place.
Ron? Ray?
Yeah, please go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with Ron. One of the easiest ways of doing this is not bearing the requirements for the disclosures and publicly noticing these, because what that does is that allows the community, people then know that you've got the community involved in the verification process, and don't delude yourself into thinking that people aren't just looking these things over very, very carefully. And I think if people understand that there's an obligation for them to complete these disclosures accurately, and that once the disclosure is completed, it will be published. And I think that's a good step. And I agree with the idea of not getting the staff involved, other than if someone contests or has an inquiry regarding a disclosure or non-disclosure, there has to be a point of contact so that this can be forwarded. And I think it's better if it goes to the staff than it would be if it went to a committee chair or the council chair. And I think there has to be a process that allows for impartiality in reviewing this thing so that you don't run into an issue as well. So now, the board has some of those things embedded in their conflict policy. They have a committee, they have some place to go to, but even then, in the past, it's not worked as well as it should have worked. It's, you know, it's kind of like if you had a situation where you have a conflict, who do you talk to? Do you go to the chairman of the board? Do you go to the council for the corporation? You know.
Yeah.
And it's almost embarrassing, and if there isn't a clearly detailed process, sometimes you get reluctance on the part of people. You know, and let's not delude ourselves. Over the next 10 years, there's going to be a lot of important decisions that are made. And the optics, and I think that's why I'm concerned, and I'm sure that's why Ron's expressed his concerns about these things. And I think staff has to have clarity exactly how they're going to have to interact in a process like this so that we don't get into a situation where something gets inadvertently buried or not managed properly. That's all.
Well, from a blocking and tackling procedure, let's just shift gears a little bit.
Ron, back.
Go ahead.
Just a quick response to what Ken just said. I agree. Staff for administration is exactly the right way. And what occurred to me as he was saying that is that we go back to the other work we just did and the idea of separating administration from policy. This would be one of the roles for the administration group, that they would pull together like a rotating group that's constantly reviewing any of these things that get brought back to the table, saying we feel that this individual is outside of their is standing outside of their conflict of interest statement. Then there has to be a party to review that. Perhaps that's part of the administrative side of the GNSO house that will have a standing committee that addresses those issues.
Can you clarify, Ron and Ken? Were you saying that staff should be reviewing these documents?
No. Staff just does the administrative aspect of it.
Right.
There would be a committee that could be established within the administrative side of the GNSO supporting organization. And as part of their mandate, and they would have a standing committee, let's say, of three people, five people, to do these reviews when and if, or if and when, they should arise. So when something would arise, then an individual within the community could take it to the chair of that committee and say, I'm concerned about this individual for these reasons. And at that point, that chairman of that committee would then go to staff and say, would you gather this documentation that's needed for this review? The committee would give a review, the staff would write up the response, and it would be submitted in some public forum.
Yeah, that's a good approach to take, because if you have defined governance like that, it keeps everybody a little bit more on the straight and narrow path, and I think that's a very good approach to take. There's no reason why the GNSO could not have, in effect, some form of conflict of interest committee. It would be easy to put something like that together, and we could even propose a structure for that that would be easy to deal with.
Be careful, because what we just said was a conflict of interest committee.
Well, if you have a statement of interest, or if you do not declare a statement of interest, all right, the point is that in most cases, the lack of declaration of a statement of interest, it creates, I don't care what we want to call it. You understand what I'm talking about.
I get you. Let me take a pause for a minute. Let me go off on a related area. From a blocking and tackling perspective, can we envision this thing being an online form, required field sort of thing where people can go online, kind of like you ever do a doodle? I'm sure we've all done a calendar doodle. Type in my name, click submit, There's my, it's got these questions, mandatory answers required. Can that, and then when you click submit, it goes to a page, if you will, that that has everybody's name that's submitted a statement of interest, and you can click on my name if you want and read my statement of interest. Does that work?
I think the person who could answer that question for you is on this call as well, and that's Glenn, because she's been dealing with statements of interest now for 7-10 years, and I'm sure she's lived with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Glenn, any thoughts on that?
Yes, Ray. I think it could work if that whole interface is well set up and there are no bugs in it.
Right.
As sometimes online forms seem to have, but I think it would be an excellent idea.
Okay. So we would that would be something we might want to ask ICANN staff to budget for.
Mm.
Build this application for us. All right, so but it, practically speaking or operationally speaking, we could say that works.
I think it would work because it would, in fact, be an easy way for people to go and do their own thing, and it, I think it would save a lot of staff time.
Okay, so let's run with that assumption for a minute. So now we have this committee over here in the GNSO called the Statement of Interest Committee, and every so often they're going to go to this website that lists all these people's names, and they're going to review these things for completeness, basically. Right? Or does staff review them for completeness?
My feeling is that's a staff function. The statement of the, let's call it an interest committee for the moment. The interest committee only deals with issues.
Issues, okay.
And an issue could be where someone either refuses to disclose something,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
or has indicated in a statement of interest that, you know, either has filled it out improperly, incompletely, or something like that.
I'm understanding now. So this would be more a reactive committee. Someone brings it to their attention. They're not going to go actively try and find it. But if somebody's going through the statements of interest and they've gone through a completeness test, whatever that is, by staff, now I've got an issue. I see one and I go, you know what, that to me is incomplete, or I'm interpreting, I can interpret that a certain way.
Who are you in this circumstance? Are you just a
I'm just anybody. I'm anybody. Yeah, I'm
with you. Yep.
Yeah, I'm just anybody. And now I want to raise my question. I mean, it's not even a concern at this point. I just have a question about this. So I need a place to do that. Now here's this interest committee. And somehow I'm able to contact them and ask them my question or voice my concern. Is that what we're thinking?
Yes. That's how I saw it. I see that there would be a committee that would be a standing committee. And the nice part about this kind of a committee is that, you know, it can be 6 months, it can be 12 months, but you just rotate through. So there will be, you know, there will always be, let's say, a body of three or five that is available to hear one of these issues. And then if nothing comes up in my period of time, just like jury duty, I go home. You know, I'm finished with that, and I move off of that committee and someone else sort of moves on to it. But that way, there's no capture in the committee, and there's no capture, you know, no one can influence the committee's view because it's really looking at something as black and white. Is this information correct or not?
Now, would the person that's offering the question or the concern, are they able to remain anonymous?
I don't see why not. The issue is really, is the individual being questioned, is that data correct or not? If the committee then steps forward and finds that it's not correct, why does it matter who brought that to their attention?
Sure. Just
I think
out loud.
Yeah, I feel my view is, you know, it's kind of like when you're walking by a work site here in New York City and it says, big sign on the wall, it says, if you see anything unsafe here, call this number to let us know. And of course, I don't have to reveal who I am.
Okay, well, we're moving on the hour time. Let me kind of recap in that we're going to move away from this conflict of interest policy. We understand what it is. We understand its purpose in the ICANN realm, particularly to board members. One question I did want to ask was, should a conflict of interest policy exist for council members? Different than working group members, but let's hold on that. Where we're at right now is there is a divergence. We understand it. We see it. We're focusing in on the concept of a statement of interest, which is softer, which we understand. We understand it's probably, we want to encourage adoption or encourage participation, and it's a statement of interest and a disclosure of interest documents are softer in that there's not a hard commit or enforcement mechanism. But we do want to set up a watchdog mechanism, which is really what I'm hearing, one for completeness on the one hand and then another in case someone wants to raise a question. So there's that. Now, in terms of action steps, how can we go about what should be in the statement of interest document? What are the questions? You know, what's your name? Do we want to ask for an address, phone number, email? And what are the rest of the questions? Now, I know we have something now. Is it complete? Is it what we want? So there's, and what is it? I filled one out. I don't remember what the questions are. Okay. So I'm wondering if, how should we do this, guys?
My knee-jerk reaction to that, Ray, is that the existing document that's out there is pretty good. I think it fulfills the purpose that we're looking for. We should look at it again, but I think my knee-jerk reaction is it fulfills that. But I do not believe we should be putting, phone numbers and addresses and other things on there. I don't think we have them now. I don't think it's necessary then either, because it's easy enough if I'm on a working group or on the GNSO Council, it's easy enough for people to find me. But I don't think we should be putting it out into the public domain, telephone numbers and so forth, so, because you never know. Someone, maybe part of the community or not, they're not happy with the work you're doing on a work group or whatever, and they decide they're going to harass you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not make it any easier for them than we have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay, so action step is what? For us each to review the current statement of interest and in our next call say that it is satisfactory or not satisfactory, offer any additions to it or changes?
I would suggest, I actually had marked up mine, I will submit my comments to Julie, and I would suggest we all submit anything that, any comments that we think to the original draft that she sent through, and if it makes sense, I would suggest that we try to get that done during the course of this next, before Monday, and then Julie can circulate a revised version, or even a redline version, perhaps.
The actual document that somebody would fill out?
No, I'm sorry. I was talking about Julie's draft of the SOI and DOI. Did I misunderstand you? I beg your pardon.
No, not necessarily.
The statement of interest we can all look at in our own time. I mean, it's just five or six questions.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was getting at was coming back to Julie's original draft, just to try to move the ball a little further upfield. I have marked up her draft with some comments, and I'm going to submit those to her.
Mm-hmm.
And my point was to recommend to the rest of the members of the work team that we all submit anything that we feel would be of value to that document. And then Julie can prepare a more, let's say, call it version 2 by early next week and circulate it to all of us so that when we get on the next call, we're actually talking about substantive changes to do this, so that by the time we get off the next call, we might have an SOI, DOI document that's kind of high-level principle ready to go.
Okay. I like that approach. Who was that? I'm sorry.
I was asking just for clarification. What are you referring to this version 4 document, SOI, DOI policy document?
No, I was referring to the title of Julie's document that she submitted right back in the beginning when we started talking about this. She sent out there's some yellow blocks of text. It's called the OSC GNSO Operations Work Team Suggestions.
Yes.
Draft definitions. Right.
That's version 4.
Right.
42709 is the date I had. Well, maybe that was the day I printed it.
excuse me for just stepping in, but the latest version is online. It's linked online. Wolf Ulrich is right. It's four. But Ron, if you've marked up an earlier version, that's not a problem because the differences between them aren't that great, and I'm happy to assimilate.
Yours into whatever else I receive. And please also note, Ray had asked about the questions that are currently asked, and those are listed in that document as well. There's four questions that are currently asked of council members, and those are the four questions that all of you answered as well.
Yeah.
And
if you do have ideas of changes to those questions that you would like to include when you're marking up the document, that would be fine, too. I'd be happy to note them as well in the new redline version.
Okay.
Okay, team. I think that's a great place to be right now. For our next call, we should have feedback on the other document, good or bad, or we should have something to work with, some feedback. And then I think in the meantime, Ron is going to send his edits again over to Julie. They're going to do a little bit of maybe conversing. And then at some point, Julie's going to send out to us as a group this new version. And then it's up to us individually now to read it, understand it, and offer ourselves any edits or feedback to the document so that when we're hitting the call next time, we're hitting the ground running with the SOI DUI, as Ron put it, to move the ball a little forward again.
Ron?
Yes.
I mean, Ray?
Yes.
When is next time?
Actually, before that, just quickly, Ray, just a correction of what you said.
Yes.
I would like everybody on the work team to whatever, even if it's a small word change, whatever they have.
Yes.
It's just not Julie and I working on this document.
Oh, right. No, I meant that.
Okay,
I meant
good.
That.
Yeah,
I thought you guys were going to go through.
But I understood as well.
Good,
yeah.
Very good. That's
oh, yeah, I meant that, Ron. Yeah, but good clarification. I did mean that, whatever I said, but didn't say that.
Yeah.
And then our next call, Ken, is 2 weeks from today. Same time.
Can we move it 1 hour earlier?
May.
I can't. I can't if we alternate the darn week. We keep falling in
the
on
wrong
the
week, and it's also when this time is a bad time for me. When's that date exactly?
It's the 27th of May.
May 27th.
I can't get at this point in time, Ron. I may be in an airplane over the pond. So I can't guarantee I can make this call, Ray, in 2 weeks. I'll do the best I can, though.
Understood. Okay, understood.
So the 27th is the day, and is it possible to move it forward an hour?
I can move it back an hour. In other words, 1700 UTC. I can't do 1500 UTC.
No, 1500 UTC won't work. It overlaps with another call.
Yeah. But maybe, I don't know if 1700 UTC works for everybody. Now, Yov, that would be, I think, difficult for him. He's in Israel. I think that would be difficult for him, but he hasn't.
No, it also doesn't work for me. I'm the whole afternoon, like from 12 o'clock till about 3, I'm kind of tied up. But let's do this.
Just that one date or every Wednesday?
Every Wednesday, well, and then I'm going to be leaving the country going to Europe for June. But let's do this. Let's call it for 12, and if I will try to arrange myself accordingly. If I can't, all of my comments will be submitted in writing in advance in any case.
Okay, and then, Ron, if this becomes more of a conflict for you, let's work on another. We can work on another day. We can work on
any other day would be fine. Just Wednesday in the midday in the afternoons, I have a commitment. It's a standing commitment, so I'd like to try to keep that.
I know that's a problem for Glenn, what I just said.
Yeah, I know. So let's just leave it as it stands right now, 27th. Is the day and the time we will remain the same. If I can't make the call, then
okay.
Glenn, you're dialing numbers in Clwyd, Ireland, don't they?
Yes.
Okay,
and if
thanks.
You need to be dialed out to you, I can do that again.
Okay, thank you.
Wow, that's great. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, this ICANN Sydney meeting is coming up. I do have a conflict that week, as I do every year for this particular ICANN meeting. I will not be attending in person that meeting. That doesn't mean we can't get together as a group. I would also be able to likely dial in if we wanted to do it that way, or someone could step in as an interim chair for an in-person meeting in Sydney. So that's food for thought. Maybe we can address that on the 27th as well.
Very good.
All right. With that, I am going to ask the recording to cease. And unless anybody has any other business, we can adjourn the call.
Glenn, can you stand the call for a moment, please?
I'll do that, Ken, yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and disconnect the recording.
Glenn,
recording disconnected.